This house is cursed. They were all godless here. All. They used to bring their women to this house, brazen, lolling creatures with their silks and satins. Oh, they filled this house with laughter and sin. Laughter and sin. Wicked, blasphemous men with their painted women. They reveled in the joys of fleshly love. Oh, I can still hear the echoes of the past. Oh, what memories!
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and this week we are doing Haunted Honeymoon, a Gene Wilder movie from 1986, an award-winning movie from 1986.
Which award would that be, Jason?
Well, thank you for asking, Trish. It would be Worst Actress Razzie Award to Dom DeLuise.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. Yeah,
hello, Sam.
Hello.
Yes, this sucker was written and directed by Gene Wilder, co-written with Terrence Marsh, budgeted at $13 million, grossed about $8 million, but it only ran 1 week. Because terrible review. One more week, they could have at least broke even.
Yeah,
I know.
Right? They probably would have got close to breaking.
Like
even.
That's the thing. Even with a bad review, people were they would have gone for the same reason I went to see it. They had Gene Wilder and Gilda Radner together on screen.
Yeah,
and
for the third and last time. Yeah. Because this was Gilda Radner's last role before she passed away in 1989. Gene Wilder, Gilda Radner, Dom DeLuise, Jonathan Pryce, looking very young.
He's good at this.
Yeah, Brian Pringle, Peter Vaughn, Eve Ferret, Paul L. Smith, Jim Carter, Joe Ross, Roger Aston Griffiths, and Anne Way.
No slouches on any of these people.
No, not at all. I mean, this is a mystery thriller comedy thing?
Well, it's those old house movies that were coming back into vogue at that time.
Yeah, Clue.
With a bit of comedy.
Clue had already come out.
Rocky Horror was becoming a cult film at that point. Yeah. And that's what I felt they were trying to accomplish with this movie, especially when they added in those the musical numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like they were trying to...
I actually like the musical numbers.
Yeah, and so actually, so did I. I think the...
Gilda Radner, by the way, when reassessing from that, I'm like, what a classy actress that would have had a hell of a career if cancer hadn't taken her so
amazing.
Young.
Amazing.
She was. I mean, I have no complaints about the performances in this movie at all from anybody. Even Dom DeLuise was, he was eating up the scenery, but he was just having fun.
Yeah.
No, my issue was that it was just really shitty directing.
Yeah, well. And
it was totally all over the place.
This would be why Gene Wilder never directed again.
Yeah, because it was, I'm sorry, Gene, but this was just bad.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird. With the story, you could tell he had a love for, like, those old horror movie kind of creepy, chilling, but you could have a little comedy in it. But it just wasn't strong enough, and it was tonally all over the place.
Yeah, I liked the throwback to old-time radio.
Oh, I enjoyed that, and I would keep that.
Yeah. Now, we decided to do this because Gene Wilder had passed away, but he passed away while we were doing our horror month, and I didn't really want to bump that. So, we're doing a couple of tribute episodes to the wonderful talent that was Gene Wilder, and no disrespect to Gene, this was definitely not one of the better ones, but...
Oh, I'd say this is probably the worst film he did.
Yeah, but it's got so many interesting elements to it that you know, it's a bad movie that is remakeable.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
With some, because it has some really interesting conceits to it.
But it's also one of my, like, it's one of those ones that's so bad, I still enjoy it. Like, yeah. I can still watch it, and it's still, it's a good, you know, you're kind of down, you don't want to watch anything too challenging. It's,
I'm a no on that one.
I think I'm good. This
I just
may
like Gilda Radner and Gene Wilder.
This will be,
I do too.
And but they've got two other movies together that I will gladly watch before I rewatch this one. I do like seeing them together on screen, but I don't want to watch this movie again. I'd rather go, you know, watch Young Frankenstein or something.
See, Young Frankenstein was better. I didn't like Woman in Red. I didn't.
Yeah. No.
I thought it was just...
I didn't either, honestly.
See, I enjoyed it when I saw it. I have not seen it in 15, maybe 20 years, so it may not stand up.
I'm a little more open to the pairings with Richard Pryor.
I quite
like those
Gene Wilder pairings. They had such great chemistry.
Yeah, it was really tough for me to pick a movie for this particular episode. And every one of us had a different choice of Gene Wilder movie we wanted to do as a remake. So I kind of took it to my clientele, and the first one got backed up with Trish. So that's the one I went with, because I was like, oh, it's Wednesday and I haven't picked one yet. And oh, this is so hard.
Well, this is the thing we're talking about. You guys were saying, like, to be fair, you had these ones that you loved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much did you really want to remake them? I mean, yeah. Could you recapture the magic of Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor?
Yeah, and when you and I were doing the Abbott Costello thing, we talk about classic comedy duos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's lightning in a bottle, and sometimes you just can't recapture that by mashing two people together that have no chemistry. So they were two unique talents on this planet that, honestly, after Richard passed, Gene didn't do too much else.
No,
he really didn't.
Because he'd already lost one partner in Gilda, and... lost another great partner with Richard Pryor. So,
well, when Richard Pryor, before he passed, he was confined to a wheelchair.
Yeah,
so he wasn't,
the long illness. Yeah.
I have to look, but Gene Wilder, I don't think, did much after See No Evil, Hear No Evil, which was one of the ones on our list.
That was the one I wanted to do.
Yeah, he was mostly doing kind of like guest spots and stuff. I think he was on Will and Grace for a few episodes.
Yeah, no, he did turn up here and there, but
there was a short TV series he did.
Yeah, he just wasn't the features actor anymore. And we haven't seen much of him in a while before his passing, because I think he was slowly declining mentally. So,
well, yeah, I think was it Alzheimer's?
Yeah, I think he was heading towards Alzheimer's. I don't know if he got full-blown Alzheimer's, but there was some dementia problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think that's why he dropped out of the public eye, too. He didn't want people to see him like that.
Yeah, well, and, you know, that's when you start seeing older actors start just go quietly into retirement. And it's not a case of... they're declining into dementia or Alzheimer's, but they are having trouble remembering their lines and things like that. And
they don't have the energy to be on set for 12, 14 hours a day anymore.
So, and I totally get that. I mean, there's some actors who just have a retarded amount of energy. Betty White.
Yeah.
And 91 still going, but...
still think she's a Highlander.
Yeah, crazy. But
that's the only reason she can still keep going. She's taken the energy of other people. She has the energy of all of the Golden Girls.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a rarity. I mean, you gotta think that, you know, they're going to want to retire at some point.
Yeah, well, yeah, George Burns went for a long time, too.
Oh, George pretty much performed right up to his passing. I mean, he made it to 100, and I think Betty might make it to 100 as the way she's going.
And I think she'll still be working right up until they... make her stop.
Yeah, something about comedy is really healthy for people's longevity. Bob Hope, too. He made it to close to 100.
Well, it is, as long as you can not be one of those people sort of plagued by some of the mental illness that happens.
Well, yeah, I mean...
You can have a longevity in comedy as long as you can be mentally healthy.
Yeah, it does... it's therapeutic if you can get it out on the mic, I suppose. There are some people who never could quite conquer their demons. And we've lost a few not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, terrible.
On that happy note,
to
this movie.
Yes, not that this will be much happier to talk about, because it's so terrible.
But there's, like you say, there's something there to be done.
Oh, there's no question that the conceits and the concept of the film, like the core concept, is
love for the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gene Wilder is a an actor on radio back in the old. Did we even get a year on this? But I'm guessing about mid 30s.
Late 20s, mid 30s. Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Or even the 40s. I think radio was still really big
in the 40s. Once TV kind of kicked in, the radio started going away, but it was still pretty big into the 40s. Yeah. I mean, we still have radio dramas, but it's more bigger in England than it is here. True. We're starting to see them resurface as podcasts.
And there's a few that do podcasts. I think there's one in New York where they do like the oldie timey ones, like with Lovecraft and everything else, like the very overly dramatic.
Well, there's radio dramas of the old Twilight Zone episodes out there now, and I've listened to quite a few of them. They're really good. So they're far more recent, but at the same time, it was a bit repeat because they were the episodes, so that kind of material is already out there. But
yeah,
and there's like some old Canadian ones too, like some old CBC ones that they used to do.
Well, that zombie podcast thing.
In the 90s, they had some for some reason that there was a small resurgence then. It's amazing. I think it sort of loops back. I think we'll be seeing maybe some coming up because I think there's a love for like there's good writing that is required when you do an audio versus a visual medium, because you have to make sure that people are kind of creating the world in their
minds. It's still a very big medium in England, and I wind up ordering a bunch of CDs and stuff from England because there's so much of it out there. You're not really a name actor out there until you've done stuff like that.
Well, I think the reason that they continue to be popular is because there is a very... And it's a larger audience than people realize, of people who are creative, and they like being able to visualize their own it on their own with the assistance of the dialogue. Right? I think that's what makes them work.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I get to continue the adventures of my favorite doctors from Doctor Who as audios.
Nice. So. Oh, and then I've been going back into like my old catalog of stuff. There's a radio series called Cabin Pressure that has Benedict Cumberbatch before Benedict Cumberbatch became the Benedict Cumberbatch.
See, that's awesome, yeah.
And he's doing comedy, and he's this like put-upon pilot called Martin, where he's like cowardly and not that good at his job, and he's amazing in it. He's so funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've got Gene Wilder as Larry Abbott and Gilda Radner as Vicky Pearl. They are engaged to be married, and they are also the stars of a radio program. Its name escapes me, but the episode...
It's Haunted Honeymoon.
No, the episode...
Radio Mystery Theater?
Something like that, yeah. And the episode that they were recording at the beginning of the film is called Haunted Honeymoon, So there is actually no honeymoon in this movie, just to be clear.
Yeah, so
they are borrowing the title from a 1930s movie. 1940s movie, but it's not a remake. Yeah. So let's be clear on that. It is not a remake.
But to be fair, Haunted Pre-Wedding is not really a good title for a film.
No. Yeah. Haunted Engagement, no.
No.
That's okay. But not
Haunted Engagement just sounds like it's trying to be an action film. Yeah. Haunted Engagement starring Sylvester Stallone
and The Rock as Vicky
and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Aunt Kate.
Look at all the ghosts. One of you is I can't do Sylvester Stallone. One of you is a werewolf.
That was pretty good.
I might just scrap my whole casting now. Fuck. Well, fuck. That's way better than what I came up with.
That's better than what I came up with,
too. I don't know. I still like my cast, but yeah.
And that's been Invasion of the Remake. We'll see you guys next week.
we're rethinking this whole thing.
We just did the end. So, yeah, they're recording. They're finished recording at the beginning of this movie. They've finished the recording, and they're going to go off to their wedding
before the end of the recording.
This is where we establish that Larry has some emotional triggers that make him stare off in the distance and
ask about his tie.
Ask about his tie awkwardly. I don't know. That's his way of dealing with fear. How's my tie?
Is my tie straight?
Well, tell me my tie straight. It's because it goes back to like the reveal earlier as to what happened right before the terrible thing happened, where he's being admonished for not having his tie straight, and it kept getting twisted. So he goes back to, like, is my tie straight? Is my tie straight? Because if his tie's straight, then something bad's going to happen, I think.
Yeah. No, he'd ask, is my tie straight? Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, but is my tie straight? Yeah, yeah, it's straight. Straight. Swear to God that my tie is straight.
A little bit too much.
Yeah. I'm like, are you going to kill me now?
The audio effects guy is like looking like, I just said it was straight. This is so weird.
Yeah, and that's triggered by storms and the storms
and wind.
Storms and wind. And yeah, he does
a bit act of an on-air meltdown.
Yeah, on-air meltdown, a little rational, but I don't know. They are a big star. Like they break before their final bit of recording, so this is like, I guess, a commercial break or something. And all these reporters come rushing in and asking questions, and he manages to hold it together for the most part. Mm-hmm. But
near the very end,
Vicky Gilda Radner, she's the one that kind of keeps him on track.
Mm-hmm. She's the calming influence in him.
Yeah.
She's both the trigger and the calming influence, you sort of find out.
Yes.
Because like he's been becoming more unhinged recently since they got engaged.
Yeah.
So he's almost in peril of losing his job on this hit radio show.
Yeah, they are really at their wit's end, but at the same time, he's a huge star. So you can't really.
Yeah, but I don't really know. It was the old 1940s.
Then again,
maybe they were just more disposable.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we need another voice. It's not a face.
Mm-hmm.
So
you can do that.
Yeah. The plan is to get married at Aunt Kate's old dark house.
Where he grew up.
Very gothic mansion.
Yeah. A very gothic mansion where he grew up.
Yes. Which I love that house.
Oh, before the opening, we have the awkward pan across the house. And this lady falling through the window, and then the hair falls off. Not a lady.
No. But there's a knife in his back.
This very deep voice, and it's Francis Jr.
Yeah.
Who says, it's not what you think. And I'm like, well, if that doesn't set this whole movie up, I don't know what does.
And then it keeps panning. Then it stops. Well, it's kind of what you think. But not totally what you think. And then
actually,
he dies.
That opening actually gave me a little bit of hope for the movie. I'm like,
I love that opening.
I like the opening too.
Yeah.
It doesn't pay off as well as you'd hope. But
that's the thing. In some of this movie, there's lots of little bits I really love. Like them as standalone comedy pieces do kind of work. But sometimes they seem like they're a little bit shoehorned in to try and make them happen.
Sometimes they feel like they're trying to be serious and then not serious. Like sometimes it's almost farcical, and other times not so much. It really has a tough time figuring out what it wants to be.
Yes,
I think that was part of my issue with it. And honestly, there were too many people in it.
Yeah, I agree. I would have knocked off some of that cast just to add to body count.
Yeah,
fit out the herd and simple out the cast a bit.
Yeah, because there were so many characters in there, and they introduce them, and then they don't really do anything.
Oh, yeah, like the ex-girlfriend. Like, I didn't even bother casting Sylvia. Yeah.
Well, I did, because she was there to create tension between Larry and Vicky.
Yeah, and that was...
handled it very well.
Yeah, although Gilda's final scene with her was pretty good. And then
so good.
The way she kind of handles that, and then it's... you never really see Sylvia again after that.
But. Yeah, I was thinking, like his cousin Susan and her husband Montenegro. You've cast a magician, and then the only kind of magical thing you see is when he first comes to the door, and then it's done. Right.
Yeah,
and then he just stands around and glowers.
It isn't actually the only
during
magical
the musical
scene,
thing.
But,
it is a scene, but I kind of took it that part of what he is doing is all the illusions are what he's there to do.
Yeah, that mongoloid walking down the wall.
I mean,
but again, not really explained, because he was there and he just kind of glowers in the background for the most part.
Yeah, and that's the problem. They don't set it up, and it even takes a little bit to tell you he's a magician.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and they sort of skate over, and this is what I bring up as a more important plot point, where Aunt Kate, great Aunt Kate, has made Larry the sole heir to her fortune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you don't find out until the end, really.
That was right at the beginning.
That's at the beginning, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, it is, yeah.
That's actually before Larry even arrives.
Yeah, before he even arrives, right at the beginning. So, but if he dies, then they all share it equally.
Then it goes back to the original, original will.
See, I would kind of change that. I would still make him the sole heir, have them kind of do it equally, but also have a thing where, like you say, I would keep some characters, but only just to be knocked off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I would keep him there just to be knocked off.
I want him to be a fight for the inheritance.
So now you've got some of the relations who want to knock off Larry to guarantee their part of the inheritance. And then Uncle Dr. Paul Abbott, who is a psychologist who thinks by scaring Larry will help deal with his emotional issues, but he uses, like, scare him to death. So it makes me wonder if he thinks that maybe he knows about that new will or not.
Well, like, Uncle
Francis.
And they
never really define that.
Uncle Francis is there with Aunt Kate when she tells him that she's changing her will. So
yeah,
I think Francis Sr.
does know because he's the executor.
He's the executor of the will. So he knows, but I think he's also told the psychiatrist Paul that's what's happening. I think he's been let in on it that way.
Okay.
They don't tell you that, but when they're having drinks and they're kind of sniping at each other.
Yeah, it's unclear who knows what.
Yeah, and that's deliberate, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
It helps with the reveal at the end.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't even think that most of those cousins are there to help with Uncle Paul's treatment of Larry. And for the wedding, right? I mean, that's ostensibly why they're all there, is for the wedding.
They're all there for the wedding.
Right? Because I think most of them genuinely like Larry and don't wish him harm at all. They actually want him to get well.
Yeah. And it does seem that way, especially when his fiance joins in on that gag.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to run the trailer, let everybody catch up, and we will talk some more Haunted Honeymoon.
It should have been the happiest moment of their lives, the night they came home to be married at the house of Great Aunt Kate. But it turned into a haunted honeymoon. I know that one of you is a werewolf. Oh, hairy. All over. Someone or something is trying to scare them to death.
Now, if anything frightens you, anything at all, you just holler.
Holy baloney, here we go again.
I just found Cousin Francis in my bed.
Was he wearing a dress?
Yes, he was.
Just ask him to leave, sir. Tell him you have a headache.
Whatever happens,
who knows if any of us shall ever see the morning.
They have to be ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
While you're still healthy.
You do the rock and break.
Yes, sir! It's the biggest thrill of my life.
You put your luck out.
You'd think this would frighten me.
And bring it back.
It's not what you think.
And it's the
Well, it's partly what you think, but wait! Oh, wait!
Starring Gene.
Whoa, 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 whoa! Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Wilder, Gilda Radner,
Larry.
Oh, this thing's pinching my butt.
And Dom DeLuise in his most demanding role.
Oh, it's so complicated.
Haunted Honeymoon.
I think you can probably tell by the trailer that it is kind of hammy, over-the-top, farcical comedy.
Yeah.
Which maybe a big reason why I didn't enjoy this all that much is because I don't really enjoy that type of comedy.
No, neither do I.
Right, so that may be why I'm not loving this film.
Although I gotta actually admire Dom DeLuise's restraint in this role, because, I mean, he could have really hammed that up. He played it overly dramatic. Didn't really play too hard into that female voice that he was trying to do. Like, it was kind of just a softened version of his own. And I'm like, that worked. That worked really well instead of trying to raise your high-pitched your voice.
Oh,
What most people try to do when they imitate women.
Like, he's got that old lady bit to it. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of liked his performance. The pieces don't come together for
everything he kind of says is kind of a non sequitur most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have much relevance to anything. Like, she talks about, I know one of you is a werewolf. It's supposed to be part of it, but it doesn't really.
Well,
it's
out of place
and out of context.
Well, they do explain that. Part of the family legend is somebody was bitten in the forest and might have werewolf blood that might have been passed down. So it is explained in the movie. It's just really kind of left field.
Yeah.
True.
Like a lot of things in this movie.
Well, when she comes, when all the family finally gathers and she finally comes down, sliding down the banister.
Yes.
Which I love.
I love that too. But she comes down overly dramatic, and I opened up with that sequence before I introduced the show. And, you know, she's talking, basically saying that the house used to be a brothel. Horror house.
Yeah, they fill this house with laughter and sin. Laughter and sin.
And then she slides down the banister. Yes.
Yeah.
No, and I enjoyed almost every moment that Dom DeLuise was on screen.
Yeah. Right?
There were a couple moments where it's like, again, editing or something where it just didn't seem to fit in place.
Well, even bad Dom DeLuise movies, like, I always enjoyed seeing Dom DeLuise on screen. Didn't really matter. But, and that was another great comedy duo, going back to Abbott and Costello, was Dom DeLuise and Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yes. I know, right?
Yeah.
So good.
It's funny, if we're talking about Dom DeLuise, I'm going, Cannonball Run. I have to watch those again.
Yeah.
Because they also had Sammy Davis and Dean Martin in that one. Well,
we will technically be covering that down the road on the show, because that kind of was remade as Rat Race. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I thought Rat Race was, the Great Race or whatever it is.
Maybe. I'm going to have to do some more research.
Oh, it's a
There was a Mad World remake, yes. And that was a very similar idea.
Oh, so. See, I thought that was Rat Race. But
There's two cannibals and then an unofficial one as well that had a different title. I think it was Speed Zone or something.
Speed Zone, that's what it was, yeah.
That was the unofficial one. So
I just remember the two. One was Farrah Fawcett. Who was the other one? There was two girls.
And Annette Funicello.
No.
It wasn't. Who was it?
Where they're just in the jumpsuits.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
In their Ferrari.
I don't remember who that was.
Adrian Barbeau?
I think it was. Maybe. I think it was Adrian Barbeau.
That's who it was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to get to that. But yeah, that's what I remember. I'm like going, the girls, come on, go. So happy. But yeah, no, it's sort of, the werewolf thing, I think it's a little bit, it's extraneous. Yeah. I could see somebody trying to make Aunt Kate go insane so that she dies and that inheritance gets freed up a little sooner.
Yeah. Well, and the death of Frances at the beginning, before that reveal of the will change, what is that? Like, what motivates that? Because, I still don't know.
Because Frances likes to impersonate Aunt Kate. The killer thought he was killing Aunt Kate when he killed Francis Jr.
I don't know why
that's
I didn't make
why that,
that
happened.
Of course. So they were trying to already get the will moving.
Yes.
Before the will changed.
Before the will changed.
Yeah. And he killed Francis Jr. before, and then Kate changed the will after the murder.
Yeah.
So that's.
I guess it wasn't clicking in because I was sitting there going, fuck this movie.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. Like, some of it is, the really important details. They just flag it, like they blow past him. So you don't notice. And that's part of the problem. Like, I think you kind of got to act like people are stupid and ensure they know what's going on.
Yeah, it gets buried in a lot of other dialogue. And there's a lot of talking in this movie.
There is, yeah.
Right? And I think they could have gone with a lot more of that physical comedy that we did enjoy, the sliding down the banister, the scene that Trish was talking about where Gyllenhaal is on the moose head, which was so much fun when Vicky walks into the room and he's up on the moose head in his underwear and screaming about a snake. And that was genius.
With Francis Sr., his uncle. And then at the end he's like, oh, Uncle Francis, this is my fiance, Vicky Pearl. And he's still on the moose.
And see, moments like that would show you how good this film could have been.
Yeah. There were times where, like, Gene Wilder as Larry there were, even though he'd been scared out of his pants a moment ago, will just kind of like, yep, this is happening now, so I'm just going to go roll with it.
Yeah.
And the scene in the basement when he finds the two bodies, he's flipping out, and the two cops come down, and then
love that, you know, too. Another physical bit.
Yeah, after the thing with Pfister being really drunk and thinking Larry killed these guys. So Larry has
Pfister tries to kill him.
Pfister tries to kill him, so Larry knocks him out. So now he's in there too. And these cops come down the stairs just as Larry's about to get out of this. I don't know what this thing is, actually.
It's a wood
laundry chute or something?
No, it's a chute for where you have wood.
Okay.
When you chop wood outside, you can push it down the chute, and then you have a container that you can go and grab wood to go make your fire.
Yeah, like a coal chute or a wood chute. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what this thing is. So he's about to climb out of that when those guys come down. So he comes back in, and and it's Fister's legs are kind of hanging over the edge. So yep. I don't know why these guys thought he was sitting, because his legs would have been really tiny.
Yeah, that's what made it funny, though.
He's a radio guy. He could be deformed. They don't see him on screen.
Yeah, so he realizes they think he's sitting, so now he's got to play it. And then
he's wearing a bathrobe, so he's able to kind of cover it.
Yeah, so anytime Fister kind of moves...
I love when he turns around and punches Fister in the head.
He beats him on the head with a lock
to knock him back out. It was genius. Like I said, that scene, it really engaged me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was probably one of the more funnier moments in the movie. When it was really hard to even pull a laugh out of me on that movie, but that one made me smile,
and
at least.
It plays into, like, the cops are like, oh my god, you're Larry Abbott.
Yeah.
Like, the one cop is so starstruck, so he's not paying that much attention.
Yeah.
But this scene also does identify with part of what made this film not work as well, is so many of the bits got drawn out too long.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? They could have been shorter.
That's true. When they do a bit, it's so long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's not a long movie.
It's not.
Just under an hour and a half.
Well, maybe that is kind of the problem, because we did have an interesting story, but it's getting overshadowed by the comedy bits rather than the comedy bits supporting the story.
Yeah, and you don't really get a chance to know the characters, really.
Larry and Vicky and... kind of, actually, oddly enough, Sylvia, I know more about than anybody else.
Yeah, and Charles, who's dating Sylvia, you kind of just get a sense he's a bit of a dog, but...
Oh, he is.
And Skeevy, but that's, you know, he's the boisterous one of the family. Outside of that, you don't really get to know much more than that. Like, how did he hook up with Larry's ex?
Yeah, and like, why? Right?
Why? Is this deliberate?
So clearly still in love with Larry.
Well, he talks about jealousy like at the very end of the film. He's like, I'm smarter than Cousin Larry. I'm better looking than Cousin Larry. Like, he's jealous of Cousin Larry. That's why Sylvia's there.
Yeah,
Sylvia's
there's obviously
just...
a competition in his brain, mm-hmm. but you don't
Larry
really,
doesn't know about it.
Well, we don't know about it until really in the end of the movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's no hints towards it. No. And I think that was deliberate because they want you to be surprised at the end of the movie.
Well, and
they don't do a good job of doing misdirection to all the people. They'll make somebody deliberately look creepy, and you think, oh, this is that guy.
Well,
or a voice disguise, and like, oh, maybe it's this girl.
Here's what I'm guessing. Here's another two. I'm guessing you missed the whole bit too, where Montego the magician has a huge gambling problem, and they're in serious debt.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was another misdirect, but again, another misdirect. They just blow past.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, out of context, it doesn't get referenced again later. He's just looking
creepy, and then he has debt. That's all we really know.
I think if you strengthen the framework that all of his family have financial problems and want the money, but at the same time they've decided to go on this quote-unquote plan to cure Larry, you might have something to go there, and then just have the comedic parts be part of it.
Yeah, and Susan shows up fairly late, and I don't know what her thing
separately
is.
Separately from her husband.
Yeah. Because, she's married to Montenegro.
Yeah.
Yeah, again.
Right?
Yeah, and again, and he does that magic trick just inexplicably at the door. I'm going to make my cane float. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or my eyes glow. The eyes glowing thing that drove me a bit nuts.
I was like, well, they're already talking vampires. Is he, or werewolves. Is he a vampire? Yeah. So I was thinking werewolves, vampires, maybe he's a vampire. I don't know.
I'd replace a lot of his creepy magic tricks with just regular magic tricks, and have most of his story be like how he's creating the creepy crap that has to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
but he's more affable about his magic.
I kind of made him in my mind. I'm like, oh, he's Spider-Man villain Mysterio.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. No, but he could have been a very engaging character.
Yeah. Right? And I don't want, like, when they do the musical number with Gilda Radner and Dom DeLuise, I wouldn't have that moment where he's trying to scare Larry. I would like have most of it where Larry's getting scared, where nobody's around, and people like, because he thinks he's going crazy and there's nobody to witness it.
Yeah.
So he's afraid to tell people. So again, adding to his fears.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't sure that he was trying to scare Larry so much as Larry was having one of his panic attacks. Hmm. That was the feeling I got from that particular scene, is that he was starting to have one of those anxiety attacks.
Maybe.
He's already been scared a couple times.
See, again, this lack of clarity is a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Montego is just scary generally.
Yeah,
that's just his normal persona.
Yeah, and
so Larry should be used to that.
Yeah, I see. I would have liked to see, like as you said, have him be more affable with the rest of the family, and then have that real conflict with Susan.
Yeah.
Right. When they're by themselves and talking about the gambling debt.
Yeah.
Right?
They made too much of his family all being creepy. Yeah. You needed more variety. That's why they were so interchangeable. Like Uncle Francis was creepy at points. Montego was creepy. And Uncle Paul was really creepy. Like, you don't need everybody to be creepy.
And I thought Dr. Paul was going to have a heart attack at any moment. Yeah. He was just looking...
this, sweaty.
Yeah. This Orson Welles intensity.
Yeah. And see, when he first came on screen, I'm like, he looked like a nice man. I thought he was going to be the kindly uncle, right?
Yeah.
And that was kind of the way they sort of cast him, too, originally. He's the one who's trying to help Larry, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked to see him play that kindly uncle.
Yeah.
Right?
But all we see him is the, like, we're going to scare him to death.
See, but you can play, like, you can have somebody who might play, like, a kindly stern type of uncle, like he's going to be tough but fair. I don't know if that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he was just more, he seemed like he wanted to scare him to death, like to death.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the problem, and this is kind of spoiling the reveal at the end, the whole point of some of these, this over exaggerated characters and plot is because they're basically reciting an episode. And so there's a reveal right at the end that this is a radio program that they're actually in, not this isn't the real thing.
Yeah.
So that kind of accounts for some of the over-exaggeration.
Yeah, but it's not a well-written radio program. No, we need to fix.
It's not, yeah.
It was a device within a device
as
well because, I mean, based on what we saw, they were radio hosts playing radio hosts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Playing... an engagement. Yeah, the
problem is you know right away at the beginning that that's what this is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because we've already seen them in the radio studio, and you kind of just based on how people are acting, it just feels like that old radio thing.
Like overdramatic.
Overdramaticness. Yeah.
A little too much.
Yeah. And that also would explain why Dom DeLuise was playing a female character as well, because it did happen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very Shakespearean.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually probably pretty accurate, and they probably did that a lot back then.
Yeah, and I have no objections to the device within a device. I just think that it could have been handled a little more subtly.
Yeah, well, I mean, you need to give the characters a little more motivation, personal motivations. Like, there was so little time given to that and more to the gags that it just, you didn't care who was doing it at that point. It could have been everybody for all we
knew. And you can, if you make the gag support the story rather than the other way around, that's what you need. Because it seems to me there's a certain point, some of them felt like, oh, I know what would be cool is if I'm on the moose head, and they sort of constructed it around that. Like, we've all seen these movies where we know that there was like five scenes they wanted to film and just wrote around that.
Every Jackie Chan movie ever made.
And what was the dude in the werewolf mask that gets killed?
Completely unnecessary.
What was that about?
He was supposed to be a killer, and I think he was supposed to drive Aunt Kate mad because Aunt Kate thought somebody was a werewolf, and he was dressed as a werewolf to kill Aunt Kate, but actually killed Cousin Francis. It was just handled
so poorly. Yeah. Again, and then, missing details, right?
Yeah, and then somebody kills him, and then...
And that's... We know who that is.
Yeah.
Now, yes.
Now, yeah, that's Charles.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this... You think it sounds complicated? It's just stupid.
Well, it's too... They made it, like, too complicated when it is, like, it's simple. Like, his cousins want the money... Are they really helping to scare him, or are they really trying to kill him?
Yeah.
You can do that and make a misdirect, but you just have to construct it the right way and give enough time to it. Like, I think they spent too much time showing them at the radio show and before they show up at the castle.
Yeah. They were trying to hint that Susan might be the werewolf because that little dog was always barking at her.
Yeah.
But again, I think the problem too is we had all these, and this might have been a little bit of self-indulgence on Gene Wilder's part, but he had these incredibly long comedic bits that I've already mentioned, which seemed to go along a little bit longer than they needed to. When he could have shortened those by, in some cases, a couple minutes and given more screen time to these cousins and the rest of the cast, establishing their interests and motivations, and mm-hmm. really making them characters instead of just these warm bodies on a set.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about the movie, and it really is the bits that stand out in my brain. The scare thing with the moose and the guy walking down the wall, that whole bedroom
that was
scene.
Great. I love that.
It looked great.
Yeah. Then there's the one in the basement, which we talked about.
And then the one where they're trying to bury the bodies.
And the bury the body scene.
Which was agonizingly long. I'm sorry. It was too long.
Yeah. Do you want to take us through that one?
Oh, yeah. The burying of the body scenes. Okay. Well, at a certain point when they're trying to scare Larry, they've already got Vicky in on it. So she's on this harness outside, telling Larry to come outside. Larry comes outside. Then there's like a grave. And then the grave has a hand come out that grabs him. And that freaks him out. And that's how he ends up in the basement with the cops, blah, blah, blah. But past that, he gets out again, finds that the casket is just filled with like this mechanical arm. And he follows that, finds out that where the lightning and thunder is coming from. Then somebody hits him and Pfister with like
he finds the mongoloid mask.
Somebody hits him and Pfister with a shovel, who's dressed as a werewolf again. Yeah. No reason why. Because Pfister is putting the two bodies, Cousin Francis and the guy who was originally dressed as the werewolf, in the casket to bury them, because that's how you butler, I guess.
Well, he's protecting Larry because he's realized that Larry wasn't the killer. True. And now he's trying to protect Larry. That was very clear, is that because Larry's his favorite, and Larry's always been his favorite, even though at the beginning of the movie he doesn't remember him.
Oh, because he has blackouts, I think.
Oh, yeah. That drove me nuts, too. Okay, so sometimes he's hard of hearing,
sometimes he's not.
He couldn't remember. But it never plays more than once.
No.
It doesn't follow. Nothing follows the rule of three.
He has a myriad
movies.
Of symptoms, but they only occur once.
Yes. So why? Why do you even do it once if it's never going to play again?
Mm-hmm. Like there's one called Murder by Death, where it's another sort of big house, haunted, sort of scary, funny movie. Mm-hmm. But there's one conceit, and the butler is blind, and that's it. Yeah. And that's all they go with. It's a very simple conceit, and that's why they're like a blind butler. What the heck?
Yeah, no, and I think that in our remake, the butler does have to have a quirk, but it has to be a single quirk.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. That is repeatable.
Yes,
and that causes some misunderstandings.
Yes.
Because in like Murder by Death, the butler's blindness causes a misunderstanding because the cook is deaf and mute, and holds up signs for him, but he can't communicate with her because he can't see the signs because he's blind.
Which is a funny conceit.
Yes.
Yeah, that works better than what worked here. But and you get the old his wife?
It's his wife, Rachel.
Okay, Rachel's his wife, and it's also the maid of the house.
Yep.
And she's just constantly yelling at him and everybody.
He's constantly drinking. She's trying. She's one of those wives. She's stuck with this old guy. He's just drinking his whole life. Like he's downstairs when Larry ends up downstairs in that cellar. Pfister's already partway through a bottle. He's hammered.
That's true. I liked when Larry's talking about the body in his bed.
Yes.
And when he discovers Francis Jr. in his bed as the first scare, which I don't know why they were doing that, but...
See,
so was Charles was trying to scare him as well? Let's cure him before we kill him?
No, this is another one of those we need to do a comic bit that's going to take forever.
Yeah. And not fit into the rest of the script.
Yes.
Because the only person who knows that Francis Jr. is dead is Charles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? So it had to be Charles to put the body in the bed, but why would he do it?
Yeah, why would he do that in the first... I don't know what that was about. And then he runs out, talks to Pfister. It's like, oh, I found Francis, and he's in my bed. Well, just ask him to leave.
Yeah. He's dressed in Aunt Kate's clothes. Like, just tell him you have a headache, sir.
That's it.
That's what told me it was a comedic moment, and it doesn't really fit.
And there was something about, do you know what it's like to be in bed with a cold body? Every night.
warm brandy helps.
Warm brandy helps.
Yeah. See, the bit was funny. Didn't fit, though.
No, and then he goes back in, and then the body's not there. He goes to sleep, and he does that little mantra in his mind that his wife or his fiance.
There goes my imagination again.
And Vicky, and then of course this guy comes walking down the wall in a mask.
Which is a magician,
and he's like, "This should be scaring me, but it's not.
Yeah,
because I know it's in my head."
Oh, and all I have to do is reach out and touch it. And he does, but which I kind of want to keep this, where he's touching it and like he's got his fingers in the nose, and you feel, hear those squishy sounds. He's like, and he puts his fingers in his ears. He's like, ah.
Yeah, no, and those are that, another great bit, right? And that one did work though.
Yes,
right.
That looked like the Mongoloid from Goonies.
True, it did. It, yeah, it looked like Sloth.
Yeah, it totally looked like Sloth.
But yeah, like, he's got this one tooth, and he's like sticking his fingers all over it. Like, yeah, it would gross you out. It's funny, and I think it should stay in because that's part of the things that's supposed to scare him with.
Yeah, it's actually not bad because that's he's one standing on the wall, and then he bends over, and I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty good.
See, I feel that's what all of those comedic moments should have been, because that supports the whole scaring him narrative while still being a funny part.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that, and that's kind of where it could have been great.
And I would have liked to have seen more of those and more of how more behind the scenes stuff, right?
Yeah.
Where they're plotting this stuff to scare him, right? And have the whole murder mystery sort of happening in the background where you see it, but it's not the core story.
Ooh. Or you have ones where, like, well, have you seen Cousin Susan? Oh, I don't know where she went. Like, she's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, when they're all gathering, like, okay, so next we're doing this, like, where's Cousin Susan? Where's Uncle Francis?
Well, I wanted to see the discussion with Dr. Paul and Vicky, because, you know, he shows up, and next thing we know, she's floating by Larry's window in her wedding dress.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, we know that he's trying to scare him, so she's obviously been convinced.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way I took it. But I get the feeling we're supposed to think that maybe she got murdered.
See, yeah, and that, like, would be stupid.
And it's stupid, but they don't commit to either direction. And, like, well, I'd rather have seen the discussion or at least something remotely that looked maybe threatening that maybe we could think that.
And this is where you can do the affable Dr. Paul, where he's like, no, Vicky, we're doing this for his own good. Like, we're trying to help him. If we can just crack him to, like, the very base of what caused this trauma, we can help him and you can have a lovely life together. We just need you to do something terrible right now, if that's all right.
And, you know what I would have liked to have seen too is before the reveal that they're trying to scare him, I would have liked to see some scary things happen so you don't know that this is actually a plot. That,
ooh, yeah.
Right? Because when you hear Haunted Honeymoon, you expect ghosty boo stuff, right? Yeah. But we don't get a lot of that. We get the werewolf, we get the ghost scene, the rest of it's all kind of physical scares.
Yeah. Right?
So I would have liked to have seen more ghosty boo type of scares, and then they reveal that these are deliberate.
Well, the torch with the hand and the fingers that went like that. That kind of ran up and down.
Yeah, ran up, but like it was somebody holding a hand that was a torch, but it was supposed to be.
It never does anything.
Yeah,
like Larry technically doesn't see it. He kind of catches something a quarter of his eye, and nothing moves, and then they move on.
Yeah,
and I'm like, but
so, yeah, missed opportunities.
There's
ooh,
what was that?
What we could do, like, rather like ditch the whole werewolf thing, just say like our family has been cursed. And then, like, that's where you can have the creepy stuff happening in the house, but you don't know what's going on, maybe.
You got Aunt Kate with the, this house is cursed.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
Our family has been cursed for generations.
Yeah. You could just leave out the shitty werewolf part.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for being haunted, they don't show much in the way of haunting.
Exactly. That's and certainly you want it to be unexplained for at least a little while.
Yeah.
And you can pile on to, like, somebody trying to scare Aunt Kate because they also want her kind of dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that was what the werewolf was intended to do. It just wasn't handled all that well. Because
what fucking hitman uses a werewolf costume? Like, well, seriously.
Again,
you pay him enough, he'll dress up.
I guess if that's her fear, they're just trying to give her a heart attack?
Well, he was supposed to maybe scare her before he killed her.
I think that maybe he's trying to make people question her sanity so that the will could be contested.
Ooh.
Oh.
But again, not explained.
Let's use that.
Yeah. You could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could add that. That's definitely a lovely little
And then the werewolf twist. Would make sense.
Yeah.
But I don't. I still think the werewolf should go, but making Aunt Kate seem crazy is definitely something that should stay.
Yeah,
or having things happen to try and make her crazy. So you could have two different types of scares going on. One trying to make her crazy and one to fix Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and, you know, and here's what I think.
Ooh, you could double up with her and Larry together. They're trying to scare Larry, but make Aunt Kate go crazy.
Well, yeah. I think part of the problem with this movie is it's only Charles winds up being the villain when everybody's got proper motivation to do this. So, okay, Larry should be knocked off, right? This is the character because so now they can share in the wealth. Well, hey, how do you get more wealth out of that share? Let's still start killing off each other.
Yeah, no, and there's...
That's my idea, yeah.
Definitely something that has to be happening. And I like the idea of having... Actually, you have three different things happening. Okay, you have them trying to scare Larry to make him better.
Mm-hmm.
You have somebody trying to make Aunt Kate
go
insane. And then you have a third party trying to kill Larry.
Yes.
Right? So it gets really complicated, and they're all overlapping, and you could have so much fun with the situational comedy where they're almost running into each other.
True.
It could be so much fun.
Yeah.
And I just set up the basement scare. What are you doing here, Susan?
And not everybody is aware of the changing of the will, so some of them would be motivated to kind of thin the herd a little bit because their share would get bigger.
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah. Like, I think I like the idea of saying you don't know who knows.
Yeah.
Is the killer,
you never
but
know
everybody
who knows
else.
What.
Everybody else might, the rest of the people are sincerely trying to help Larry.
Yeah. Or sincerely trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Right?
But you don't know who's who.
Yeah. So, you could have three different motivations happening there and getting some really great comedy.
But just make it clearer at the outset. And you can do it with more time with the other people, like you were saying.
Yeah. And you never have to know who it is.
Until the very end.
Until the very end. Right?
Yeah. No, I like that. And, a lot more misdirect. And it's a bit of... You know, they wanted to be a whodunit, but by the time you get there, you don't care whodunit.
No. And if you add more where it's people and, like, bumping off other bits of the family, you can make more use of the big, what I always love about, like, those old haunted house movie chillers with, like, the drawing room or, like, they're in some passageway or something
that. Yeah, like secret passageways and stuff like that. It could be so much fun, right?
Yeah. Well, they have that in here. It's just,
they're not used very well.
They don't use it very well. They're like, oh, yeah, this panel opens up and there's a knife comes out and pulls back. And
yeah. Well, they have the brick wall in front of his room and then all of a sudden the doors open and it's gone.
And it's gone. You know, there's some neat things there, but, I kind of want to see them work.
Yeah, like you can have a rotating wall. You could do all sorts of fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. As we discussed in Amicus Don't Meet Frankenstein, we love a rotating wall.
Love a rotating wall.
Or a fireplace.
Yes.
Worked in Indiana Jones.
Yes. Yeah, it did. Yeah, I mean, and the thing too is, all these people know this house.
Yeah.
Right? Including Larry.
Yeah.
Right? So, and that's the tricky part is how do you get that suspension of disbelief from him,
especially
knowing well he knows that there's hidden passageways and stuff.
Yeah, if you grew up there, especially kids, they touch everything. You're gonna discover
a few things. Played in these and used them to scare each other, and right. I mean, there's another thing that you could go back to is have a childhood flashback where they're always scaring Larry.
Yeah,
right. Because that could make it a lot more fun. Is they're always scaring Larry, and so that could play into this. I know it's in my head thing because. He doesn't really believe the scares because...
Now, let's get to the...
And that can also play into the fact that maybe they feel bad about it.
Yeah, we haven't actually talked about the root of Larry's trauma.
Yes.
Yes, which gets explained very late in the movie.
Yeah, very late in the movie. So it's a dark and stormy night. And he's a child.
Yes. And his tie is not straight.
And his tie is not straight. And his mom is getting married.
Yes.
On a dark and stormy night, as it always is.
I don't think it's a night, it's a day.
It's a very cloudy day then. It's dark. it's dark and stormy time of day.
Dark and stormy midday.
It's not nearly as dramatic. No. As weddings tend to happen, lightning comes through the window and
she
gets struck by lightning. I'm assuming she died on the wedding at the wedding. We don't know. The flashback ends.
Yeah.
It just kind of ends right there.
Yeah, see, like, I can kind of see how they were thinking that because it was a wedding, him getting engaged made his condition worse.
Yeah.
And I think you can still kind of keep that idea that it makes his condition worse, but I think we need a better...
Better trauma.
Better trauma.
Yeah. Better trauma.
Like, maybe his new stepdad kills his mom on the wedding night.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
It's going into a dark space, but yeah.
That's okay, because my remake does.
Nice.
I want to take this a whole lot more seriously.
Oh, see, I do not, but that's yeah. just me.
No, I, yeah. We already know my stance on comedies, especially comedies that don't work like this one. So we already gave this one a shot as a comedy. It didn't work, so let's go full bore with it.
Yes. Well, yeah, and you always do that with tend to do that with comedies or movies you don't like. It's like, I'm just going to change the whole damn thing.
Yeah. Yep.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm just gonna, well, I like a lot of it. Yeah. Like, I'm going to keep the radio stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really like that. I want to keep the setting, you know, of the 30s. It's a time I think is really interesting. So.
Well, it's sort of that old stoic gothic house. It seems weird now.
Yeah.
Like in today, you can even go back to the 80s, but it seems any more current, it seems weird, right? Is it just me?
I don't know.
That, like just, old gothic houses don't feel current.
Anymore, yeah. 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 And that's just it. Yeah. They don't. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it felt really empty.
Yeah. It did feel really empty. But yeah, I think just that filmmakers don't go to that unless they're doing like a supernatural horror period piece.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I mean, you have seen some like that one with Daniel Radcliffe, the Lady in Black, I think is what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's like the 1800s.
So, yeah.
And it's so boring.
Yes.
So boring.
But we're not talking about that movie. Sorry.
No, we won't. We never will. Because it's so boring.
Because there's no way you can watch it again.
I can't. There's a sequel. I'm like, I can't do it.
There's the a
first,
sequel?
There's a sequel. And the first one was so boring. I mean, it's very gothic, but it's so slow.
Yes. And there's nothing wrong with a slow burn as long as it makes sense on the way, but that one never did make sense, really.
No, I never could make heads or tails of that movie.
I don't mind a slow burn as long as the last 10 minutes are batshit insane in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you give me a really good payoff at the end, I can forgive sitting there for an hour and a half going, come on, come on, come on.
See, House of the Devil was batshit crazy at the end, but it was so stupid I got so angry.
Well, we'll save that one for our 31 Days of Horror podcast.
But yeah, like if you really make the payoff worth it, a slow burn makes the rest of the movie great because you remember a really good ending that does it justice.
Yeah. And I'd like to see that happen with this one too, right? Is it have the long setup. Right, and then have like a really good payoff at the end where you don't know who the actual plotters and killers are until the last few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, and with whoever's left standing.
Yeah,
yes, exactly. Some of them are going to die now.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I love that bit where Charles says, Charles is smarter than Larry. Charles is better looking than Larry. Yeah. Like, it was probably the best part of the best performance part is because it showed that he was really kind of nuts.
Yeah.
And that played really well to the fact that he had gone off the rails and killed his killer, right? Killed the guy he hired to kill people and started doing it himself because, you know what? He's gone beyond any type of morality that was left in him.
Yeah. And the part with Vicky in the kitchen where he's talking, quote unquote talking to the police and then something drops on the floor and Vicky notices that the phone line's been cut. And she stands up to be like, yeah.
Larry's not the only actor in the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he goes to kill Vicky, and she's like, better take off.
Yeah. Right. So, but yeah, I think this movie had, like, the core story and concept has great potential.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Very Clue, Murder by Death, which was a great film. I remember this. When you're telling me, they're telling us about that, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that movie. I remember seeing that and laughing my ass off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was smart, funny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A bunch of it's super racist now, but... It's the conceit that it was all the people who sold the mystery magazines. They had to solve a mystery in this house, and a bunch of them were going to die. That was a great conceit. I loved it.
Yeah. So, any final comments on this film before we get into recasting this thing and rethinking it a bit?
I love Gilda Radner. I love Gene Wilder. And like I say, like this could have been great, but like you say, the comedic parts are kind of standalone and they don't really fit the purpose of the movie. They don't serve the purpose of the movie. And if you can make that change, it could be fun, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, you can balance this movie out a little bit better and then it could be a little more of that goofy
whodunit.
Yeah, a little more whodunit. I want that balance of humor with what we're seeing. And, you know, something like Shaun of the Dead does that a lot better, where you have these goofy characters, but in a terrible situation. And sometimes you know, there is true peril there.
And that's why I picked him as my director.
Nice.
Yeah,
well, there we go.
Yeah. That's why I smiled exactly. So big when you said it. Cause
well, I make sometimes I make the realizations as we record. Yeah. So
exactly.
As I become more and more unconvinced with my casting, but yeah. But it can still work.
Yeah. Well, if you've gone more serious, I mean that could be more a lot of fun too. Is it's always fun getting serious actors into comedic roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't cast with comedy in mind, but I do have some guys that are very capable at it in my casting,
there's some great dramatic actors that can do both, and they're great.
Well, let's get into some casting, and we'll talk some more about some changes we can make, but I think we've kind of got the skeleton of what we want already there. So, Sam, since you've already... I'm guessing it's going to be Edgar Wright as your director.
Oh, yeah. Guess what? Right there. Director Edgar Wright.
Okay.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So, I'll be honest, my toughest casting was Larry.
Oh, that was definitely my hardest.
Yeah, but I went with Jason Segel.
Mine was replacing Gilda Radner was really hard. Jason Segel is excellent, by the way.
Yes. And I didn't try to replace Gilda Radner. You can't, right?
You can't do it.
But so I went with an actress who I know is really good at that type of comedy, does both physical and the farcical. I went with Rashida Jones.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Because I really liked her in Community. Not Community.
Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, yes. And then she has that other show that I've only seen one episode and I can't remember where it's like the... very
she's like
Naked
a detective
Gun
or something?
Yeah. Very Naked Gun. It's got a talking dog in it. It's really over-the-top comedy.
Okay. But
again, really good in it. For Aunt Kate, I went with Meatloaf.
Nice.
Right? Like I said, I wanted to keep that and I'm like... Yeah, let's go with Meatloaf.
Well, he had tits in Fight Club.
Yes. For Cousin Charles, I went a little less handsome leading man type of character because I just wanted to see Patton Oswalt play Cousin Charles.
Ooh.
Right? I think he'd play that slightly crazy, and it would explain the rivalry a lot better.
I would have done him as Francis Jr.
Well, I thought about that too. Actually, that's where I first thought. I'm like, no, you know what? I'm going to make him Cousin Charles.
That's still good. I like it.
Yeah. For Pfister, I went with Vince Vaughn because he's huge and he just could play that lurchy type of butler.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where I really thought what they were trying to do with Pfister was trying to give him that. Yeah. Lurchy kind of feel, but they just with this one.
I like that. I wanted to keep that they were old.
Yeah,
I imagine
that he grew up with these people.
Yeah,
I imagine Vince Vaughn as like a stoner butler. I don't know why.
That could be fun.
Like that's why he can't remember stuff.
For Sylvia, the ex girlfriend, I'm with Anna Faris.
Nice.
Okay.
Again, because they're all about the right. That she's about the right age, and I could see her taking a smaller role because she's not really working anymore. For Susan. I went with Elizabeth Banks because I love Elizabeth Banks and she does great comedy as well.
She's good.
Mm-hmm. For Uncle Paul, I went with Michael McKean.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I think he could do that kindly uncle character very well.
We've seen him do both sides of that. You know, that's good.
Anything with Christopher Guest, he's great at.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I almost cast Christopher Guest, but I'm like, no, you know what? I'm going to have a little bit of fun with Uncle Francis because I did want him to be kind of creepy and a little weird.
Yeah. So he's on Better Call Saul.
Mine's very different from yours.
Yeah. And then for Uncle Francis, I went with Christopher Walken because I wanted the slightly crazy uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did cast Montego as well because I wanted that magic happening and explained better. So I went with Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh,
because he does do magic.
I was trying to be on that level, but who's a dark magician? And I'm like, that won't make me roll my eyes. And I just couldn't find one that I was happy with. So I did cast, but it never wound up being a magician in the end. So that's good. I like it.
And if we're going with that more affable character, Neil Patrick Harris is perfect for that. And he can go into that and then have that conflict with Susan sort of behind the scenes. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Right.
Nice. That's great.
Well, I'm going to break up the comedy. So I'm going to go first and then we're going to end with Trish. Because I always go last.
Exactly.
And if we got two comedies, let's bookend me.
For sure.
There we go.
Let's bookend with me. Okay.
Well, this could be an action movie, as we were talking about earlier.
Well, in my remake, and, you know, I didn't even come up with a director, but that gothic look Tim Burton does really well, but unfortunately, even he doesn't do that very well lately. So
I thought about him, but I'm like, if I could get old, like, younger Tim Burton, go back in a time machine, get that Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Bring him here.
So I'm unsure as far as a director, but I, you know, I'm on board with somebody like Edgar Wright for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only pick Guillermo del Toro so many times, so I'm just going to leave him off the list entirely. Okay, for my Larry Abbott, because I wanted to go a more serious road, but with some comedic elements, I think my cast still works with throwing a balanced bit of humor in there, but because I want more kills, I want to bring more horror into the movie. So my Larry Abbott is Sam Rockwell. I wanted somebody nice. Who's already played in period movies and could do that radio kind of dialogue.
Mm-hmm. And he does great comedy.
He does great comedy too. So yeah, I went with Sam Rockwell as my Larry Abbott. Now my Vicky, boy, did I have a tough time with Vicky. You know, I had two choices, so I'm going to tell you both because I'm kind of 50-50 on it. Vera Farmiga as Vicky or Jessica Chastain. So I'm
for the more serious Haunted Honeymoon, I could see that.
Yeah, for my more serious one. And for my Aunt Kate, I actually went with a female, but you could still roll up your shoulders and say, is she? Kathy Bates.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
I really like the idea of Kathy Bates in that role. I wanted a few horror icons in here, and she's done lots of horror, and she's very capable of comedy.
And she's also like a big personality, which I feel Aunt Kate is.
Yeah, yes. And very lovable. So mm-hmm. I want to see her in that kind of role. So I totally see her there. Now, it's Invasion of the Remake. I always like to bring somebody in from the original. Unfortunately, so many of them are gone now. Especially, in fact, your three big leads are all gone. So I brought in Jonathan Pryce as Dr. Paul Abbott.
Okay.
So, oh, and nice. He's been so... He can pull off creepy as that character is. But we've also seen him be lovable in Pirates. So he can be menacing and everything else. Yeah. So
we were discussing Jumping Jack Flash a long time ago. He's almost not in that movie, but yeah. He's so charming.
Yeah. So, you know, when he's being charming, you buy into it. When he's being a villain, he's also very good at that. So I'm like, hey, all right, we'll keep you in.
Nice.
Oh, man, I had so many different Fisters and Rachels and... For Francis Sr., I went with John Glover.
Ooh.
For Francis Jr., for the short time he's on screen, honestly, I just cast him because he kind of looks like Roger Aston Griffiths in the original. I put Toby Jones as Francis Jr.
Oh, nice.
Because he just looks like the guy. Yeah. There's a couple of times I'm like, oh, you look like this actor and this person. I'm like, but because I'm going more serious, there's... Sometimes the casting went out the window when I made an association. And, of course, Pfister and Rachel. I didn't actually cast Sylvia. Doesn't matter. I kind of wanted her to be... I wanted to change her up a little bit and be the trashy ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And just kind of have her own motivations of trying to get rich by marrying into the family kind of thing. And didn't work with that brother, so let's go to the other brother, right?
Yeah.
And she's just motivationless in this movie.
She's
just there to cause conflict and with Vicky, which you can still do.
Yeah.
So I'd make her a little less likable, but I don't have anybody for her. For my Pfister, I had Tobin Bell.
Because I wanted
somebody kind of creepy, but still older, because they're technically kind of like his grandparents, right?
Yeah. So Saw is what he does with his vacation?
Exactly.
Okay.
And Judith Roberts is Rachel from Dead Silence. Oh. Right. I know you just watched it, so you totally works, right? Totally works. I got a couple more here. For Susan, Claudia Black. A lot of people will probably remember her from a lot of sci-fi stuff. Oh, man. And it's all... popping out of my head all at the same time. Stargate TV series she was in. That first Riddick movie.
Oh. What was she in the first Riddick movie?
Yeah. Pitch Black. She was in Pitch Black. She was kind of the mechanic with the dark hair.
Okay.
Oh, no, okay. I know she is.
Yeah. And he's a good New Zealand actress.
Nice.
But she could do American accent just fine. So, and she kind of looks the part with her black hair. You know,
she does. When you said, now that I know who she is, I see it.
Yeah. With when she has the black hair, I think she's been rocking some blondish kind of thing lately. But, and Montego, I wanted somebody you can pull off a little creepy, probably do that magic stuff, but can be likable at the same time. We've seen him be very menacing as Siler and somewhat likable in Star Trek.
Ooh.
Zachary Quinto.
Nice.
So yep. That kind of rounds out my cast. Now, if we kind of go that more balanced comedy horror, this cast still kind of works, thank God.
Yes.
Because I was thinking more hardcore horror, but I'm kind of more leaning towards the comedy horror that we've kind of worked out the balance a little bit better on. So my cast still works.
Your cast does still work, yeah. Because, yeah, I've been fortunate in the few horror comedies I've watched for 31 Days of Horror, which we'll talk about later. I've been very fortunate they've been enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because there are some really bad ones out there.
Oh, there's some, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some bad ones.
Okay, Trish, let's get to your casting.
Okay, I went a different way with this because I thought I could add yet another layer of what's going on in this movie.
Excellent.
So, I was struggling with my Larry Abbott until I decided to go a different way. My Larry Abbott is actually Donald Glover.
Oh, okay. All right.
Donald Glover is one of the adopted children who's there, which again adds to why people want it off. I'm like, why is he adopted kid? And there's also more adopted children. So it really messes everything up. Okay. And Vicky Pearl, Abby Jacobson.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the leads of Broad City.
I don't know that show. That. No.
She's kind of young, but I could see them as a young couple ready to embark on their life together.
Okay.
Aunt Kate. Now, I had two options here. I'm not quite sure which one I want. I when you're talking about like casting a woman in the part, I'm like, ooh, Kathleen Turner. She's old enough now. She could be Great Aunt Kate.
Yeah, totally.
Or I went a completely different way.
If you can get her out of retirement.
Yeah, if we could get Nick Offerman. Into a dress.
We both went to Parks and Rec for our casting.
We did. Yeah. We did. Uncle Francis, I put Charles Dance.
Okay.
And for Charles, Mark Duplass, who I just seen in Creep and creeps me out. And I'm like, so he can do creepy, but he's also funny in The Mindy Project. So I put
I know he's now, yeah.
I put Mindy Kaling as Sylvia.
Okay.
Because she's brash and she's loud and she's buxom. And I'm like, Mindy Kaling.
Okay.
For Susan, like Montenegro, I've got Keegan-Michael Key.
Okay.
And why? Because I think he's very funny. He's very affable. Also, I just like he's got that magician-y hand. I think he can pull off a magician-y look.
Okay. A lot of hand gestures.
Yes. He's got magician-y hands.
You're making a lot of hand gestures.
He's got magician-y hands in my head. Yeah. Okay. And Susan is Chelsea Peretti.
Oh, nice.
Because I feel that they would be a good match.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Yeah, they would.
Okay, and Cousin Francis, I don't know. I have Jordan Peele as Cousin Francis.
Interesting.
Because I kind of want him alive a little bit longer in my remake before he dies. Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind him have at least a wee bit of interaction with somebody in the movie instead of hanging out of a window in the intro.
I want it to be sort of a mystery whether he's been killed because he's dressed up as Aunt Kate or because somebody's taking him out because he's another part of the will money that they're not going to get.
Yeah.
So you can have that on there. Dr. Uncle Paul is what I put. Donald Sutherland.
Nice.
Because he's old enough to do it.
He was actually on my list as for Uncle Paul, actually. I was the only one. Donald Sutherland. I'm like, no, I want to go with a comedic actor. Like somebody who's got like a long history of comedy, and that's why I went with McKeon, but it was down to those two for me.
Every time I deal with a big cast that are, you know, that are related to each other in the story, you know, like if I would have gone with him, then I'm like, well, shit, now I got to do Kiefer Sutherland as Charles.
Yeah.
Like, no. Gotta keep it in the family.
They don't always have to be together. And then Aunt Nora, who is Paul's wife, I had to look that up because she has like one line. She's Phyllis from The Office. But her name is Phil. I think I have Phyllis Simpson, I think, here, or Phyllis Simon. I wrote it down bad. But I think she looks exactly like the woman, and she'd be a great match.
Fair enough.
For Pfister, I have Rory McCann.
Okay.
The Hound on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
For Rachel, Pfister's wife, I have Shirley Henderson. She's been in Trainspotting and Bridget Jones's Diary and The Young Poisoner's Handbook. No, she wasn't in The Young Poisoner's Handbook, but yeah, like she's like a very petite little British actress, but she's also old enough. She could,
right.
You age her with a bit of makeup, she could still be old enough.
Nice.
So that is my casting. And I wasn't sure for a director. I thought of Edgar Wright. I didn't write that one down. I was still struggling with it right before. Right. But I like the idea of Edgar Wright to do it as a comedy.
Yeah, if you're going to do the comedy horror kind of thing, he really does have it pretty pat.
And he's good at A and B stories as well. Like, yeah. When we're talking about adding more levels to this, he can do that and not have it detract from the overall story.
Yeah, he tends to have fairly large character casts for his movies. Like, there's a lot of people floating around, Shaun of the Dead and World's End. And
it never feels bloated.
No, and you always get a sense of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you really need that in order to make this work.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, Hot Fuzz has a lot of the misdirects that this needs.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was a great example. That's a great example of how it could work really well.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, so he's kind of already done it.
Yeah. Well, then he has to do this now.
Gun pointed at head. Go do it.
No. We'll just sit down and convince him. We'll buy him. We'll take him out, give him cake. It'll be fine.
Nobody turns her down apart for cake.
No.
It's cake.
Or pie if he wants pie. It's Thanksgiving in Christmas time.
You're offering up pie.
Yeah, pie. Pumpkin pie. It's pumpkin awesome. Pie.
And a good cuppa?
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to mess up his tea.
Well, now, I'm hungry.
Yeah, me too, actually.
I didn't have lunch. This is probably why this is happening now.
I'm not hungry. I had a nice big breakfast.
I like all three casts. They all have potential, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, and we could even mix up those casts because there's lots.
Oh, for sure.
Lots of crossover there that could work.
Yeah, I think they're all pretty good casts.
Yeah, I like the idea of a proper magician.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally wanted a real magician in there. I couldn't think of one that fit properly. Yeah.
But I'll still put Keegan-Michael Key somewhere in my cast.
Yeah. Well, you have to. I saw him in another horror comedy recently, and he may have been the best part of the movie. And it was a fun movie. Boy, was it fun. But it wasn't good, but it was fun.
He's talented. He's so talented.
Now, we keep referencing all these horror movies that we've been watching. And for us here during this recording, it's still October, and we've been doing a horror movie a day. And hopefully we'll total 31. We'll see. Sam's also in the middle of a move, but he's working his damnedest to try to get ahead so he can match up with the rest of us.
I think he's only a few away.
As of this recording, I only need to watch three more in 8 days.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, it looks like Sam definitely wants to be part of that podcast. Now, you may have already heard it because I'm going to try to get that out as soon as possible for November. So what I'm saying now, you'll be like, well, I've heard it, so shut up. But yes, we've been watching all these movies, and you will either have heard it already, or it is coming very soon.
Yes. Yes. Or maybe you flip the two episodes you're listening to. You might have listened to this one first and gone back to our Halloween one. So it might be in the right order.
Yeah. Yes, I don't know.
Could be, yeah. But it's certainly, it is coloring our conversations right now, particularly mine, because there's some of them are sitting in my head really well as they come up in context to what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yes, 93 movies in one episode. Holy cow.
There might be some overlap. But
I hope you enjoyed it because we haven't had the conversation yet.
If not, I can tell you right now, still enjoying doing it. There's a couple times it's been a tough haul, but I've had mostly good movies. So
yeah, I got to say, well, no, I'll save it for the podcast.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about specifics, but yeah, I will say that there was a hump that I had to get over at one point there, but I'm now on the downside of it, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, so for this one, no werewolf, I think that's werewolf. A big one. Hitman at all? Should we just nix the Hitman entirely?
Well, the werewolf is the reason for the Hitman, so both of them go.
I like the idea of just having this legendary curse on the house and kind of building up from there as trying to scare Aunt Kate. A couple people are motivated everybody's motivated by different reasons. Some just want their portion of the will and trying to thin out the competition. Others are aware of the change in the will. And that's why they're trying to knock off Larry. And then there's some who are trying to help Larry, but you know, it's all scary.
You don't know
for
who
poor
is who.
Larry. Yeah, you don't know who is who. And I'd like to add the little bit of there is an actual haunting in the mansion.
Yeah.
Because there are some things in this movie that, like the hand on for the torch in the basement, like it didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It's sort of, there's a lot of set pieces that don't gel together, but I want it to be.
Yeah, and if you have a haunting, it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be a malevolent one.
No, it could be something they're used to, and they're like, oh, hi, Bill. Right? I mean, you could have a little fun with the fact
that I'm not
scares
saying,
aren't all that scary.
Yeah, I'm not saying go really serious and creepy with the ghost like in Crimson Peak, but just, you know, have it there. Maybe it's helpful at times. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
Yeah, like just have somebody's unpacking and then the ghost like unpacks something else.
Yeah, maybe it's a prankster.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like with some sort of other all long gone, like just have an old gothic painting, some long gone great uncle that everybody thought was evil, but really wasn't.
Yeah, or maybe the ghost is responsible for a death. And
it feels bad.
Well, no, maybe the ghost is responsible for a death during the movie.
Ooh.
And it's actually helping, not hurting, but again, it's another misdirect motivation.
He saves Larry.
Yeah.
Ghost
yeah.
saves Larry.
So, you know, it's actually somebody who's trying to harm Larry or somebody else, and we'll just say Larry for argument's sake because he's the central character.
Because everybody likes Larry.
Yeah, right? Including the ghost.
Including the ghost. The only one who doesn't is Charles.
Yeah, so...
And also the sponsor of their program.
Even though it looks malevolent at the time, it's actually... it's actually trying to help and protect Larry.
Nice. Aw, that makes me happy.
I like that ad. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
That makes me warm.
This movie's going to be longer.
It's going
to
be longer.
It's going to be... I don't think it has to be too much longer. No. If you shorten the gags, you got some room to play with. But I figure another 15 minutes is about all we really need.
Oh, yeah.
Just to handle all the additional layers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this one's only like an hour and a half, 15 minutes.
It's just shy of an hour and a half, so...
Still
you know,
under 2 hours.
Getting an hour, 40, so, hour 45, you're still okay.
Yeah, so it's not an extra a ton. It's still keeping it under 2 hours, which is perfectly reasonable for a horror comedy. So
yeah.
Perfectly reasonable, yeah.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, okay. I'm pretty happy with the structure on this sucker. What else you get? You guys got anything else you want to add to this thing?
No, I mean, I think we really covered it.
Yeah.
I was not worried that we'd come up with a good remake. And that's the challenge for every time we do one of these movies is when we watch a movie that we don't like, we suffer through them and go, oh, I really hated that movie. But they always end up sort of with the best remakes.
Yeah, well, and it's like, how do I make this into a movie I do want to see?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're getting better. It's at finding, like, there's always a nugget. There's a nugget somewhere that you just have to find.
Hey, we pulled it off with Hard Rock Zombies. We can do it with anything.
Exactly.
True. True. Although you and I did not pull it off with
Peeping Tom. No, there was no way.
But it's too damn good.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You were always going to come out with an inferior product on that.
No question.
Same with Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It was always going to be an inferior remake, so I'll just have some fun with it.
See, and that's the thing. Like, with the Gene Wilder movies, that's kind of why I went with Haunted Honeymoon. Like, there's more beloved ones I have, but this one was one that has that room.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting ideas in here, and I still want to keep the radio thing and the fact that the whole thing is a radio play, and then you break to the characters in the studio, and then they're off to their wedding after it all plays out. But it's a good radio play instead of a shitty one.
Yes. And the thing is too is it seems to me that it was like a radio play within a radio play
and that's why the musical number's in there, because oftentimes those old time radio shows were breaking up with a musical act to give the actors a little time to breathe and you know, go over their scripts and set up whatever they needed to set up because it was also live.
Yeah, and I had no objections to the musical numbers in there. Yeah. Surprisingly enough, that those did not bother me. They were only
I would make it more
half,
of a ballroom dance thing, you know, instead of just two characters, because it's a wedding. So let's have one of more extravagant things in a ballroom, you know. Yeah. Everything in this house was so creepy all the time. Like, there should have been one of those kind of party areas.
Yeah, or maybe have it like it starts off as Montego the Magician entertaining everybody, transforms into a musical number.
Yeah, there's lots of potential there.
Hey, was Susan is like supposed to be his assistant? Like, they arrived.
She was his separately. Wife.
I know they're, but you know, I don't know. Like,
you could
add that. Obviously estranged, but. Yeah, I'd give her more to do because she kind of shows up
Oh yeah, we know nothing about Susan.
No, there's
absolutely nothing, and that was one of my big beefs.
Yeah, the dog barks at her. That's it. Yeah, she could be a werewolf.
Yeah.
And you can do so much with Susan, like
with all of the characters. They were so underutilized, and again, because it really was. In talking about it, you realize that it really was a vanity project for Gene Wilder, for him to showcase his comedic talents and his bits, which is funny because, and I mean, I'm not talking bad about the man, but I am a little bit. It's funny because Gene Wilder was a dramatic actor and didn't even want to do comedy until I think it was actually Mel Brooks who talked him into it for Young Frankenstein.
And I think that's where the Mel Brooks' influence actually hurts this movie. Like, you can see a lot of the Mel Brooks kind of humor that he'd done so many times within this script.
But the thing with, like, the Mel Brooks humor is they do put in the humorous bits, but I never feel I'm getting blown past plot point.
No.
And in this one, you're
Mel Brooks
constantly
is
blown
very
past
consistent
plot
with what he's trying to do in tone. And this one just it really wasn't, and it's unfortunate because I think it probably really hurt Gene Wilder the massive failure that this was.
Yeah,
like you said, a first and last attempt at directing.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's a general conceit so many actors have as well. I'm an actor; I can direct too, and so many of them can't.
Yeah,
right. This is a very select group of actors who actually are competent as directors as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I can think of three or four maybe off the top of my head.
Yeah, and maybe given time, you know, I think maybe gave up too quickly, but he should have started smaller, maybe direct some television to get some chops, right?
And that's the thing. I think it's sort of some of the actors that got really good at directing, their first feature weren't trying to do too much at once.
Yeah.
They went with more of a simpler story to give it more texture, and then you sort of learn from that. You can't go out the gate trying to jam a whole bunch of stuff in.
Yeah, I mean it's built around three big gags, and the movie itself feels empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the sets pieces are empty, but even just in the script, it feels empty. Like the whole feel of the movie is empty.
But what's weird is like the people playing the parts are so full of life, but the whole the movie feels empty.
I get the feeling the movie was fun to make.
Oh, for sure.
At least for some people, I don't know. Like some people didn't have dialogue, so they just stood there with their glowering eyes.
Yeah, very, very little dialogue for some of them. And again, we talked about it right at the beginning. That was my biggest beef, is they had all these characters that had, with so much potential that didn't get used.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I think we've addressed that.
Yeah, I think that we certainly have, yes.
Yeah.
We've made the change that needed to be made, is you can't just focus on the comic, those the slapstick gags. Once you pad it out and just have the gags support the story, you're all good.
Yeah. Well, later on this month, I'm not exactly sure where it's going to fall, but one more tribute to Gene Wilder. Mm-hmm. And of course, I think most people know what that's going to be. The childhood favorite, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, is coming up this month, so look out for that. It might be right after this episode, might be a little later. I don't know, because there's moving and all sorts of things going on right now. So we'll figure it out, but it'll definitely be later this month.
The rowers keep on rowing, and they show no sign of slowing.
Yes.
Yes, I'm looking forward to talking about some of the tones and how creepy that movie can actually be, and whether or not Charlie's a serial killer. To be continued on another episode of Invasion of the Remake. Old-timey. Old-timey whimey.
Brought to you by
Colgate.
And Purina Dog Chow. The chow dogs love.
And enjoy Flavor Smokes, the flavor that keeps on giving while it gives you cancer.
I'm so not doing voices.
Darn it. It was your turn.
It was my turn. I'm not as spontaneous as you guys, apparently. No. I already have a radio voice. I don't need to fake it.
Okay, so next time we just have to give you copy.
Exactly. Give me copy and I'm just fine.
All right.
Oh, God, we got to start writing for this show?
Well, you know, if we know what we got to do at the end, it's like, okay, we need oldie-timey radio dags. Here's yours. Just do it for Sam.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah, no.
Okay, well, speaking of old-time radio, I mean, I'm a big fan. Trish is a big fan. Sam knows about it.
Yeah.
I would like to know what our audience. I was a big Shadow fan, and I like Jack Benny and Abbott Costello, and I guess they didn't do too much radio, but they started with radio as well, so
Exactly.
Their bits work with radio. So, I mean, I like a lot of that. Suspense. My God, suspense. There was a ton of those.
Yeah.
So lots of good old-time radio. What's yours? What is your favorite old-time radio that you'd actually like to see as a movie?
Ooh.
I want us to know what old-time radio show you'd like to see as a movie. So tell us on Twitter, at Invasion Remake, Facebook, Invasion of the Remake, of course, on Facebook, and invasionoftheremake@gmail.com. You can do us a big favor if you'd like our little internet radio show.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to iTunes, give us 5-star rating and a short review. That really helps us out. If you leave ratings, you leave reviews, it helps us get featured maybe on the pages. We get it ups our ranks as well. So be vocal and tell people what you like or even dislike, you know, because we can learn from that as well. So write us a review, leave a rating, and be sure to tell your friends. Tell 5-10 friends. If you see us post on any of our social media and you dig what we're doing, don't just like it, but repost it, retweet it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, helps us out and gets more earballs
on it
on the show. Earballs. I'm going to have to sketch out what an earball looks like.
Get those earballs. Well, that's a horror movie could do.
Oh, what? We'll have to do that one day and just create that movie from scratch. Earballs the movie.
Earballs, yeah.
That could be fun.
That could be fun. That could be fun. Maybe we'll do that as a live show.
He thought he could hear everything. He thought he could see everything. Now he can see, hear everything. Earballs.
Rolling into theaters near you.
Complete with smell-o-vision.
Yes. If you guys want to tell your friends about the show and they can't find us, of course, as I said, we're on iTunes. We're also on Google Play. We're on Player FM. We're on Stitcher, Audio Boom, Blueberry, Libsyn, of course. Libsyn, that is our host site, so Libsyn. Tell everybody where to find us, and you know, check the podcast app you like, because we are on pretty much every decent podcast serving app that you can find. So if we're not on the app that you use, let us know. Well, of course, if you aren't listening to us, then you can't, so... But hey, we're also on YouTube. Some episodes are going to stay up, some won't. I'm kind of keeping a selection over there, so some episodes will be only up there for a short time. So if you're listening to us on YouTube, subscribe to us on one of your favorite podcast providers, because YouTube's a terrible way to listen to us anyway. We're not a visual show, and we're quite long, so you know, you listen to us on your commute, and subscribe to us through Stitcher or one of those podcast apps I just listed, because it is a much better way to listen to us is in your earballs.
Like, with other than YouTube, you can take us with you.
That's right. So, you know, YouTube will be there, but not everything's going to be there. The entire libraries are going to be up on those other providers. So, you know, and without editing restrictions that YouTube also likes to shove down my throat. So, which is why some of the episodes will be only there temporarily, is because... some asshole tried to flag it and try to make money off my hard work, and screw that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Fuck him.
Fuck him. Exactly. All right. So, well, I think that is it for Haunted Honeymoon. I've been Jason.
I've been Sam.
And I've been Trish.
And we're going to go watch a good movie now.
I'll rewatch this.
We're out of here.
Whoa.
For now.
Night.
Night, Mr. Abbott.
Good night. Nice you boys drop by. Murderer! That was phony. Murderer.